Genesis, that's Hyundai's answer to Lexus. They came and went in the Australian market. They're back and with more products. Our good friend Alan Zervis from Gay Car Boys has been testing the luxury large sedan, the G80. Alan, does it look the part?
Oh, David, it's a peach. I think it looks really, really sexy. Genesis has done so much, and I think it looks European. And if you took the badges off, I defy you to pick the difference between that and, say, an Audi.
The overall shape of it for a big car looks balanced. Sometimes they look too long and gawky, or they just don't seem to get it right. And then the lights at the front and the back, they're making a firm statement, but they're not over the top.
I think they're just a little bit over the top. There's a touch of the fairyland about them. There's so many LEDs doing their different thing. The whole car is LED. And you've got the quad lights, or however many cells there are in the front. And then at the side, you've got a couple of more banks of LEDs for the indicators, looking a bit like the vents in a Mustang or an Aston Martin. And then the rear takes me back to the days of Aston Martin Lagonda. Do you remember that from the 70s?
Each light at the back has two bands. It's almost like a licorice all sort, only extended out a bit. There's a red and there's a bit of black in the middle, and then there's a red again. And the front's the same. It's got almost like these two bands of lights, rather than the common trend of trying to copy an E-Type Jaguar, you know, with the sort of long lights that often you see there. But this one, yeah, I think it makes its statement inside. Do you feel like a king?
Oh, gosh. Well, now, when you got in today, you looked at that wood and you looked at me and you said, "What do you think of that wood?"
Hmm.
And I looked at you like you were from Mars. I thought it looked absolutely sensational, but I think you thought it looked a bit ordinary because it wasn't highly polished like your nana's side table. This was open pore timber, and it looks expensive, and it looks handmade, and the interior looks luxurious.
I don't like that highly polished stuff. I think it looks like plastic. I was interviewed one time on ABC, and the guy said, I love the Jaguar, but I hated the plastic faux wood. And Jaguar rang up and said, no, it's real. I'm with you.
But I thought that would appeal to you because you've got plastic on your sofas.
Thank you.
You know what I mean?
Plenty of room in the back, a bit of a luxury at all the controls in the back as well.
Well, you get a repeat set of the front controls on the center armrest in the back, but also the passenger front seat can be operated from the passenger side in the back seat. So if you get in and there's not enough room, you can power that seat forward, stretch your feet out. And, you know, if you've just got your man driving, you know, in the front, you can stretch out there with a martini and a day's work schedule, and off you go to work.
2.5 litre for the smaller engine, turbocharged, 224 kilowatts. That's quite a lot, 422 newton metres. You, of course, as befitting your status, had the upmarket 3.5 litre bi-turbo, twin turbo, 279 kilowatts. That's pretty good.
Now, David, I don't approve of that language. Did you say bi-turbo? Okay, I'm with you now. Yes, so this bi-turbo V6, it's got V8 power.
It pushes it along.
It's got a 0 to 100 of around 5 seconds, but it's got 279 kilowatts, but 530 newton meters of torque. 530, that's now remember, some of the V8s, even 10 years ago, didn't have that kind of power.
No. I had a little drive of it. It was effortless power too. It didn't sound like it was really working hard or even working at a high fever pitch that a race engine might work. It just went whoosh.
You were a bit of a nanny, if I'm honest. You're a bit of a nana, and I was forced to activate your sports mode. You got an expression on your face, but it wasn't quite like when we were in that Tesla that time and you got that instant facelift.
3.5 litre. This one comes with all-wheel drive and an 8-speed automatic. All-wheel drive. I like that idea.
I think it does cost you a couple of extra litres per 100 kilometres here and there, but I think for the advantage of the grip that you get, especially in the all-weather terrain type situation, a little bit of rainy weather or some puddles or whatever, it really does give you grip.
Mm.
And you can feel it. It always feels composed.
Good suspension, and you can get an upmarket adaptive one, can't you?
Well, the 3.5 comes with that adaptive suspension, and there's a little camera in front that keeps a lookout at the road in front of you. If it sees things like a speed bump or whatever, it'll adjust your suspension. You're not meant to be aware that it's doing it. It does it hundreds of times a second, and it's meant to make your trip seamless. So the 8-speed transmission changes gears without you knowing it, and the suspension changes without you knowing it. It's all meant to happen without you being aware.
There's a huge screen in the center console. How big's that?
It's over 14 inches, but it has a 12-inch driver display, so all the driver instruments are digital. It's just one big screen. And then there's another 12-inch screen that projects up onto the windscreen. So everything that you possibly need to know is within your easy eyesight.
That heads up was big. There was a lot of space, and they're starting to pack a lot of information, including, obviously, where you can get navigation direction. But the one in front of you on the heads up display is the traditional arrows pointing. But the one in the middle, they do that differently. It's not on a map.
No, it's very strange. It's actually looking like it's on a proper road. But of course, it can get a little bit annoying when a driver gets into the car, activates the navigation, and you can't turn it off. Do you know what I mean? I'm not pointing any fingers.
We tried to set it up. But when you say it shows, you know, it's not a map, it's actually the camera. It's the picture of the road out in front of you.
Yeah.
And it's superimposing arrows of where to turn, which took a little bit of getting used to, but I quite like, because when you see a map, sometimes you're just not quite sure whether, if there's two streets close together, whether you're meant to turn at the first or the second.
Well, I think chances are you and I weren't using it correctly. However, what it looks like you're meant to do is use the heads-up display to get the ye olde worldy directions, and then the center console stack, so the big 14-inch display, that's displaying where you are on the road. And so as you go to turn, it'll have a group of arrows saying, okay, turn now, don't go in the next street, go in this one.
Yeah. What's it worth?
$100,000, so $99,900, but the car we drove today has $13,000 worth of extras with the luxury pack. It is a cornucopia. There is so much stuff. So the 12.3-inch driver's instruments, that's part of that luxury pack, so we were talking about that earlier. The smart parking assist pack, which we haven't talked about. The remote smart parking assistant, which we also haven't talked about. The 18-way driver seats and two-way bolster adjuster, and that nice little cat's paw massaging that the driver gets, plus a whole lot of other safety stuff.
Now, this is the one where we know that some cars can automatically park, but this one can do it in a way where you don't actually have to be in the vehicle.
Well, David, I think cars are getting a little bit like that. You almost don't have to be there. You can just tell it you're going to Melbourne. Why don't you meet me in Melbourne? You fly, so it takes less time. The car can just drive there. But what this car did, and I showed you the video today, is that you can park it. Now, automated parking or semi-automated parking, it's not unusual. A lot of cars do it. But what this one will do is that you can be in the car or out of the car, select the spot that you want to park in, and then it asks you, do you want to be in the car or out of the car? So if you say, I'd like to be out of the car, thank you very much, you press the button, put it in park, exit the car, it starts to beep, press and hold the button on the fob, and it will just run away and park itself in the parking spot, whether it's a parallel park or a 90-degree park, so in your shopping centre.
It's for parking so that you don't have to struggle to get out of the door in a narrow space.
Yes, though there is I've spotted a chink in their cunning armor,
mm-hmm.
and that is apparently you have to be in the car for it to exit the space.
To exit?
So it'll get you in, so then you know you don't have to worry about doors banging on sides and things. But in order for the car to get out of that space, you've got to be in it.
So they want you to go to the gym and park the car, but be thinner when you come out so you can get into the car.
Possibly leave the sunroof open and slither in like a snake. I'm not going to be doing that. I think my gut would get caught on the roof.
Has Hyundai then created something special and something different? Because some of the earlier conflict where they had with it was whether they sold it right next to a Hyundai Elantra or whether it's very much standalone. Can it stand alone? Is it good enough for that?
Look, I think it is. As Toyota did with Lexus, Nissan did with Infiniti, and of course Infiniti's failed twice. I think the difference with Genesis is that it's got a company standing behind it that believes in it no matter what. And they've poured so much money into this car. Now, if you were to buy, for argument's sake, the equivalent Audi, and this is slightly Audi-esque, it's a little bit, dare I say, A5, five-door hardtop. If you were to buy the equivalent Audi with four-wheel drive and fancy seats and a heads-up display and this kind of AEB, and this kind of performance, you're going to be paying more than $113,000. You'd be paying at least another $50,000 to $60,000. So do I think it can hold up? Not only do I think it can hold up, but I think it could easily, if the Europeans aren't careful, usurp their position.
Alan, I felt pretty good in the car, although I found the steering just a little bit artificial. But then again, I just got out of an F-Type Jaguar. You've got to be careful how you compare. Then again, it's not. It's made to be gently touring down the expressway.
Well, David, this is a gentleman's tourer. This can easily cross the continent in a single bound, and with the massaging seats, you'd get out feeling like you'd had a shiatsu experience the entire way across the Nullarbor. But more importantly, it's got the power, it's got the style, and what did Sir William Lyons say about Jaguar? Space, grace and pace? I reckon this has it in spades.
It is value for money, but that's an expression you don't want to use with a luxury car, yet it's good to sit in something so good at such a competitive price.
Well, I think the Europeans would ignore this car, would ignore Genesis, and indeed Hyundai and Kia at their peril. Now, you were talking about the steering before. Well, you've got to remember that most new cars have electric power steering. And there is now no such thing as road feel. Everything that you think you feel is simulated. It's how well it's calibrated. And in this case, it's calibrated for luxury, not for sporty handling, whereas the Jaguar F-Type is completely focused on performance.
And each to their own, I understand that. And Alan, I enjoyed the ride, I enjoyed the drive, and I enjoyed the car, of course, and I thank you very much for your time.
Well, David, that is not the first time I've heard those accolades, and thank you very much.
And that was Alan Zervis from Gay Car Boys. And we were talking about the Genesis. It's a product of the Hyundai Corporation, but it's a standalone luxury vehicle.